Hi, this is Alex Kantrowitz. I'm the host of Big Technology Podcast, a longtime reporter and an on-air contributor to CNBC. And if you're like me, you're trying to figure out how artificial intelligence is changing the business world and our lives. So each week on Big Technology, I bring on key actors from companies building AI tech and outsiders trying to influence it, asking where this is all going. They come from places like NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, and plenty more. So if you want to be smart with your wallet, your career choices, in meetings with your colleagues, and at dinner parties, listen to Big Technology Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast. I am your host, Justin Spears, here with my guy, Michael Lev, senior writer and columnist for Tucson.com. And man, it's going to be a fun show, Lev. We'll be talking some Arizona basketball. We'll be talking some Arizona spring football as well. We're going to try to pack everything all into here in the next 30 minutes or so, man. But man, it's a fun time of year, Lev. What do you think about just all the craziness that's happening in Tucson, Arizona right now?
Man, the spring is really something. And it becomes like, it almost becomes ascends to another level when the men's basketball team goes deep into the tournament, right? Like, I'm just thinking about, we're recording this on Friday morning after the Sweet 16, and I'm just thinking about what the streets of Tucson are going to look like at 5:49 p.m. on Saturday, and they're going to be empty. Like, the entire town is going to be watching this game against Purdue as Arizona seeks a return to the Final Four for the first time since 2001.
Crazy,
like,
man.
It means so much. I see to the people of this city going around town, various places this week. So many people wearing U of A gear, right? I see so many places that have like a giant bracket up on the wall, right? Like, this is it, and you know what? This might be the team to do it.
Well, let's talk about that. But before we really dive into Arizona basketball, just want to give a huge thank you to our presenting sponsor on the podcast, Pima Federal Credit Union. Pima Federal Credit Union. Whether you're saving for your first car, buying a home, growing your business, or all the above, Pima Federal puts your goals first. They offer personalized solutions, competitive rates, and expert guidance every step of the way. Because at Pima Federal, banking isn't just about money, it's about you. Learn more by going to PimaFederal.org. Lev, Arizona going to the Elite Eight. They beat Wisconsin, or not Wisconsin. Oh boy, man. I almost said the Voldemort name. Arkansas. They beat the Arkansas Razorbacks, and they did so very convincingly. I mean, it is the worst loss in the NCAA tournament for John Calipari, and the man has been to a lot of NCAA tournament games over the years between his time at UMass and Memphis and Kentucky and now Arkansas. So Arizona handed him his worst loss as a head coach in the postseason. And I mean, Arizona, they really took it to Arkansas. And Arkansas, I mean, they kind of did their thing in some areas. Like Darius Acuff still, I mean, he looked as advertised, had two more points than his average, had 28 points yesterday or on Thursday. And then, Arkansas, they had some good like put back dunks and they were able to get in the lane as well. So Arkansas, you know, they had some bright moments as well, but Arizona is just, they're just too overwhelming because they had six players, Lev, score in double figures. And not only did they score in double figures, but like well into double figures. It's not just like, oh, they barely got to 10 points. They had six players score 14 or more points. That is an NCAA tournament record. And it is the first time that Arizona has had six players score in double figures in an NCAA tournament game since 1997, the year that the Wildcats went on to win the national championship. And then my favorite part about the win over Arkansas, Lev, was that Arizona scored over 100 points. They scored 109 points, and they only made 5 3-pointers. Mm-hmm. If you take away their 3-pointers, Lev, if they played this game without making a single 3-pointer, they still win this game. 5 for 8 from 3-point range. They beat Arkansas by 21 points. They score well over 100 points. And Tommy Lloyd is right, man. You know, if the style works, then why would you try to fit a square peg into a round hole. Why are you going to try to make your team throw up a bunch of just bad shots and 3-point shots? Why? Because that's the trend. Listen, I like a Snickers bars too, Tommy Lloyd, and I totally agree with him. Snickers bar was very popular in 1946, and it's also still popular now because it's just a product that just consistently wins. And this style of play that Arizona has right now under Tommy Lloyd, it works. Why would you try to throw up a bunch of 3-pointers when you can get clean looks at the basket? You can cut, you can force feed your bigs. I mean, this Arizona team, they are so damn good, and they could do it without doing the trendy thing, and that's knocking down a bunch of 3-pointers.
Yeah, Jeff Borzello, ESPN College Basketball Insider, he posted this last night that according to ESPN research, Arizona's 90 combined paint points and made free throws are the most in an NCAA tournament game in the last 20 years. And they are the only team since 2000 with 60 paint points and 30 made free throws in an NCAA tournament game. So that means they had, so you said 109, right? 109, five threes, that's 15 points. So they had 60 points in the paint, 30. That means they had two made baskets that were outside the paint, inside the arc.
Damn.
How about that? So the point, like, I don't think I fully understood this at the beginning of the season, but let's talk through it. This 3-pointer situation, like, it is actually to Arizona's benefit that they don't rely so much on the 3-pointer, right? Like, they don't need to make them to win. A lot of teams need to make them. And if they don't, they lose. For Arizona, to me, it's like, it's a bonus if they make them, right? Like, yeah. Look, Purdue could hit 15 threes on Saturday. You never know what will happen, right? They might get like unbelievably hot and Arizona won't be able to match them. I don't think that's going to happen. But they don't rely on it. So if they're not going in, it's not that big of a deal. Their eight 3-point attempts, by the way, in that game were the second fewest of the season after the opener against Florida. Remember against Florida, they were 2 for 5 and everyone was like, what the hell? No one ever shoots this. And they set the tone right then and there, right? Like, we're just not going to be a team that relies on it. But man, I mean, Jaden Bradley's a much improved 3-point shooter. Braden Burries can stroke it when needed. I don't even think about that anymore. And kind of if there's a certain point in the season where you're like, man, is this the flaw of the team? And I think it's actually in a weird way, a strength that they don't have to count on it in order to win.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say the one flaw is free throw shooting. That is still somewhat of a concern for me, but I mean, it didn't really seem to be that big of an issue against Arkansas.
I mean, they were 30 for 39 in that game. And the point that our colleague Bruce Pasco made, and I sincerely hope that Bruce is sleeping right now while we're recording this. That guy's been pumping out so much content. It's insane. But his point was, well, you know, if they shoot so many and they shoot more than their opponents, that maybe it's okay if their percentage isn't great.
Yeah.
You know, even going 30 for 39, which is, what is that? About 75 point something percent. They still made more than Arkansas shot.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like their season long trend. So, yeah, I know it's frustrating, I'm sure, as an Arizona fan when, you know, Toby Awaka has like two shots for a flagrant or whatever, and he misses them both. And it just, his free throw shooting's been off lately, but Coa Pete's actually been better. He changed his technique a little bit. Mo Crevis, for a 7'2" center, is a good free throw shooter. And you know, the guys who handle the ball the most, Braden Burries, Jaden Bradley, they're around 80%. So again, it's not something that I'm hugely worried about.
You know, in a lot of ways this year, this season kind of feels like the disrespect tour for Arizona. Because going into this season, they were preseason ranked number 13. And, you know, a lot of people thought that maybe they would lose to Florida to open up the season. And, you know, they've had some other really good games in non-conference play and also in Big 12 play. And, I mean, Jaden Bradley going into this season, you know, no one really dubbed him as the top 20 point guard. And he has quickly established himself as one of the best point guards in college basketball. Or he did that earlier in the season. And you know, I felt like Braden Burry's kind of felt maybe a little bit of that disrespect yesterday, because you know people kept talking about Darius Acuff and really and how good of a player he is, and he's really good. I mean, he is as advertised. But I feel like nobody really talks about Braden Burry's. And if you look at Braden Burry's, Lev, in the postseason in March Madness, averaging 19 points per game, and he's shooting at a 64% clip. And I feel like the disrespect tour is going to carry over into this Elite Eight game against Purdue, because Purdue was the preseason ranked number one team in the country. And all year long, we've heard about how good this backcourt is with Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith. And Braden Smith was one of those guys that was on that list for the top point guards in college basketball. I feel like Braden Burry's and Jaden Bradley, I think this is going to be all-time games for them. And I think maybe that disrespect tour, it carries over into this game against a really good Purdue team.
Interesting. They would never talk about it.
No.
They don't play that game like in the media.
Bulletin board
maybe
material.
They would. Yeah, maybe they would after the fact, but I kind of doubt it. They're all about like the team. You know, to quote the late great Dick Tomey. And yeah, when you look at mock drafts and big boards, Braden Burry's has been inching up. I think I saw him going 10th in a recent mock draft, but still that's behind Acuff. That's behind Darren Peterson. That's behind Kingston Flemings. I mean, I've seen pretty much all of those players play. I think AJ DeBonsa of BYU is the best freshman I've seen. I haven't really like watched an entire Duke game to assess Cameron Boozer. I'm sure that's going to come up here soon, whether that's against Arizona or against others. They play tonight, of course, against St. John's. I get it with Acuff. Like Acuff is he's got a very NBA ready game. He's very mature. He's smooth. He's versatile. He's a little bulkier than Braden, but there's no way the Kingston Flemings is a better player or prospect than Braden Burry's.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And I wonder if it's just like, it's the bulk. They just have all of these guys on this team. And yes, he is the leading scorer, but he goes for however many he goes, but the storyline is six guys scoring double figures, right? Yeah. Or it's him and Coapete, or it's all of these freshmen, right? He's not like the singular force that carries the team like DeBonsa, like Acuff. And I think that contributes to the sort of the lack of publicity or respect or whatever it is that you want to call it.
And they came out and they just blew Arkansas's doors off and really set the tone. And I felt good about Arizona winning that game after the first TV timeout. And even John Calipari, you said it during the game, like Arizona is really good. And he said it after the game, Arizona is a really, really, really good team. And if they could shoot like that, if they could shoot, you know, a high percentage like they did, which was, is that their second best shooting percentage, Lev, of the season against Arkansas?
Second best. It was the best against the power conference opponent.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I think the best was Abilene Christian.
Okay.
You know, and they were trending in that direction until kind of the end of the game where, you know, it was just total junk time, right? Like they weren't really trying that hard. They shot's over 60% three times. Abilene Christian, Arkansas, and Auburn.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, if your team starts with an A, you might be in trouble. That obviously doesn't apply to Purdue. You know that those three guys, you mentioned two of them, Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer, not Lawyer, but
Loyer.
And the third one is, what is his name?
Oh, they're big men? Oh,
Trey Kaufman Wren.
Okay. Yeah, he's a
leading
scorer.
All three of those guys are four-year seniors who spent their entire careers at the same school.
Yeah.
Like, what? Three four-year seniors in this economy?
In this economy?
Come on. And then the other, like, sort of the main character for them, the other senior, is someone who Arizona fans are, like, kind of familiar with. If you dig into the memories or the recesses of your memory, Oscar Clough is this big dude from Australia who spent, this is such a weird career path, Justin. He went from Washington State to South Dakota State to Purdue. But, you know, that 2023-24 season with Washington State, that was against, that was still in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Right. So he went up against Arizona, and I think they upset Arizona that year.
They did.
At least once.
Yeah. They did.
So a somewhat, some familiar faces.
I'm pretty sure they
beat him. 23-24 season.
Did they beat him at McHale?
Was it? I'm looking it up right now.
I'm almost positive, because I remember going to a game as a spectator, as a fan, and
yeah, they beat him twice that year.
Yeah, they swept,
including at McHale.
Yeah, I was at that game. It's crazy.
So I'm gonna look up our guy Oscar Clough here while we're talking. He did not have a good game at all in the first game, or the game that here at McHale. Game up there in Pullman. Cloughhead. He wasn't a huge factor, but still, he was on the winning side.
Yeah.
Right? That's something.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know if they have enough guys like him. That's one of the, you know, that's one of the advantages that Arizona has. It's a three-headed monster in the paint.
Yeah.
And there's no drop-off, really, when Awaka comes in.
No, because even if Mo gets into foul trouble somehow, okay, you're going to put in Toby Awaka, who is good enough to start at a lot of other Power Four schools in the country. Like, he could start at any other Power Four school. Instead, he's coming off the bench. So,
how well coached are they, by the way, when they're doing this? They do what, this.
Hands up?
No, the vertical jump. Their body's vertical, and they don't foul.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, all three of them do it all the time. I remember Pella Larson. I noticed him doing it. So there's got to be somebody on that coaching staff that teaches that technique. And it's so valuable. Like, especially if you're 7'2", Mo Crevus, you do that. I mean, it is very hard to score over you, and you stay in the game.
Yep.
Right? That's the added bonus.
Lev, before we talk a little bit of spring football here, I wanted to get your thoughts on just the rumblings and the whispers going around about Tommy Lloyd's future in Arizona. And some people, they've compared it to, like, with North Carolina and that job opening up, because the Tar Heels moved on from Hubert Davis. And North Carolina, as we know, is a blue blood program. And I you know, I kind of compare North Carolina. I mean, are they kind of like USC football? Like, they've got the tradition, they've got the history, but if you look at, you know, recent years, maybe not the sexiest college basketball program.
I'd say they're better than that. I would say here's my thought process on this. I would say probably two jobs in the entire country that Tommy Lloyd would even think about. One of them is North Carolina, and the other one is Kansas. Kansas job is not open as of right now. There have been rumblings that Bill Self is considering retiring. He's had some health issues over the last few years, but you know, you talk about the bluest of the blue bloods, right? It's those two. So, you know, you're going to listen.
Like Texas football?
It's beyond. I mean,
Ohio State.
Like Ohio State football.
So this is kind of like Kenny Dillingham in Michigan.
To me, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you're going to listen. And when I say you're going to listen, that doesn't necessarily mean like you literally are going to listen. It means your agent is going to have conversations and maybe, you know, give you the Cliff Notes version of what's happening, right? So, you know, our Bruce Pasco tracked down Desiree Reed-Francois, Arizona's athletic director, in San Jose. And she said to him, we're going to do everything in our power to keep Tommy Lloyd. And I believe her. It's true. I think the two of them need to, you know, patch up their relationship and make sure that it's like in the best place that it can possibly be. Tommy, if you know, if his agents want to go there, is in a great position leverage wise, right? Like, look how successful they are. We are wanted by a school that maybe one of the few schools out there that has even more prestige than Arizona does. The money that I'm sure they'll throw a ton, you know, have a huge NIL package that they'll tout in their offer if he's the guy that they're targeting. And why wouldn't you target him if you're North Carolina or if the Kansas job opens, right? Like, he's not done nothing but win, carries himself well, players love him, right? Like, he's young enough where he's probably got 15 years still in him to coach. So yeah, it reminds me a little bit, Justin, although the rumors and reports they're more prevalent, but when Jay Johnson was in the College World Series in 2021 and then they lose and like 2 days later, he's the coach at LSU.
Yeah.
And I saw someone say that, you know, in the history of Arizona men's basketball, there's never been like a sitting head coach who has left for another job, of his own volition. Well, you could say the same thing about Arizona baseball until Jay Johnson did it. Yep. Like, it's true until it's not.
Yep.
So I don't know. That's a lot of thoughts off the top of my head. I don't know if any of that made any sense. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, and I think that Tommy Lloyd, I mean, he even said it at his introductory press conference that there is only one job in the world that I would leave my post at Gonzaga for, and that is to be the head coach at the University of Arizona. Because what the plan was when he was at a school that he called Gonzaga. I love that about Tommy Lloyd. He's been there. I mean, he grew up in the area. He's been there for so many years and he calls it Gonzaga. Maybe that's how he actually pronounced it. And the rest of the world calls it Gonzaga, not Gonzaga. But, you know, Tommy said that, you know, I was in a really good spot at Gonzaga and I was going to be the successor to Mark Few when that job opened up. That was the plan. And then Arizona came knocking, and this is the only job that I would leave Gonzaga for. And he loves Tucson. He is woven in the fabric of Tucson. He is very well connected. He's well known. You know,
and he's got a freaking kick ass recruiting class coming in.
Yeah. Next
year that could also, that team could also feature conceivably Ivan Karchenkov, Dwayne Aristotle, maybe even Mo Crevis, who I guess there's been some rumblings that he's considering coming back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're set up for success here.
Yep. And he loves Tucson. And Tucson is a perfect community for a guy like Tommy Lloyd. It is a college basketball town. That is a college town. It's not the big city, right? It's not, you know, the LAs or the Phoenixes or all these other big cities. Tommy grew up in a small town in southeastern Washington, in the Spokane area, but it's still a very small town. That's the kind of vibe that Tommy Lloyd has, and okay. So Tucson's perfect. But you know what, Lev? There's a word that I'm going to use, and it actually features your last name, and leverage. Leverage is so key in everything, and Tommy Lloyd understands, like, okay, North Carolina, they're trying to court me. They're you know, showing interest in me. Well, how can I use this to my advantage to maybe improve my salary, rework my contract, and more importantly, get more money for our basketball program so we can pay players and Arizona can have the players that they want and they can consistently win not just Big 12 championships, but national championships. You always have to use your leverage. And that's why I think, you know, Tommy Lloyd isn't just going to come out and say like, no, I'm all in on Arizona. I ain't leaving. I'm going to be here in Tucson forever. No, he wants to maintain that leverage. So that way the Arizona administration, that way they can work to make sure the Arizona basketball is trending in the right direction.
Yeah. Two thoughts on what you just said. Number one, you could say that Chapel Hill, North Carolina and Lawrence, Kansas are also true small town college atmospheres, right? But you are in more of a fishbowl for sure in North Carolina because you're, you know, 15 minutes away from Duke. There's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot more media attention from ESPN. Kansas is kind of the same way, right? Like there's a to me a slightly higher burden of expectations there than there is in Tucson. You know, like for example, when he and Jaden Bradley talked the day that the Big 12 awards were announced, and some people were traveling, like Bruce was unable to make it. I went there. There were like five media people in the room. Like, I cannot imagine that ever happens when the North Carolina basketball coach or the Kansas basketball coach holds some sort of media event. All right. And then the other point about leverage and getting what he wants and needs, I asked him that day, you know, what role has the administration played in your success as a coach in terms of resources and support? And it was a really interesting answer. You know, he's like, those have been ongoing. It hasn't been easy for anybody in that thing. I think we've gotten to the point where it's resourced at the level it should be. Like, that wasn't like, I was kind of a softball question. And that was not a softball type answer, right? That was like, hey, it's been a battle to get what I want, you know, which I was not expecting him to say. So just something to keep in mind as we move forward in this thing. I mean, people, you know, part of me is like, could he possibly leave after leading Arizona to a Final Four? Your tendency is to say no. But like I said, Jay Johnson left after leading Arizona to a College World Series. So anything is possible.
Yeah. And I was going to say, that is he going to pull the anti-Lute Olson? But Lute went from taking Iowa to a Final Four to a downtrodden program. You know, if Tommy were to leave, he's going to a program that's got more tradition and more history than Arizona. So
I have one question for you, Justin, before we shift over to football. So 2014 and 15, heartbreak times two against Wisconsin right before I got here. So I didn't like experience it as an Arizona resident or someone who's closely following the U of A. What do you remember about those games? Man. Where, how old were you? Like,
I was a student.
What was that? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was a student at the U of A, and I remember watching those games down on university. And it was just heartbreak, man. It was just heartbreak. The first year, the year with Aaron Gordon and Nick Johnson and those guys, there was actually like not a riot, but there was definitely a lot of commotion on university. And I also think I understand law enforcement, they had to be ready just in case. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they had like the riot team like all lined up on university, it was almost like, come on, do something. Like, we want to see you guys act crazy a little bit.
Was that as Charles Barkley would say, police presence?
Oh, police presence in Staples Center. Oh, that's all-time NBA Twitter moment. I've seen Arizona basketball fans get crazy after losses. I've also, you know, seen them get crazy after wins. You know, and I've heard that, you know, in 1997 that, you know, they were over there flipping cars and doing all sorts of crazy stuff on Fourth Avenue and in university. So this fan base, they care a lot about their Wildcats, maybe a little too much, but it's funny. It's like this time of year, Tucson, Arizona kind of turns into Philadelphia. It's like, the fan base is just so rabid and so crazy and rightfully so.
Yeah. Of course, Sean Miller was the coach back then, and they lost a very close game. Texas did, to Purdue, and the game that preceded Arizona's. And I saw someone make this point on X/Twitter that I thought was an excellent one. And that is that I agree with it. I'm glad that Texas didn't win that game, because like the matchup against Sean Miller would have kind of would have sucked up way too much oxygen. Yeah. Right. Like, what is this really? This isn't about a revenge against Sean Miller. This is about Arizona getting to the Final Four.
Yeah.
No matter who the opponent is. So I'm sort of glad that that's just kind of cast off to the side.
Yeah. It's been like, oh, Sean Miller never got to the Final Four. Has never been to the Final Four. Tried a few times with Arizona. Was on the cusp a few times. Couldn't go. Can he do it against Arizona? Meanwhile, Tommy Lloyd, who is the new man in charge, succeeding Sean Miller, is he going to take Arizona to the Final Four? So, you know, I grew up watching WWE. This is a WWE type of storyline, Lev. It's good for the fans. But I don't think it's good for both parties involved. So I agree. I think it's good that Texas didn't get into that Elite Eight game. But now they got Purdue. And our guy, Bruce Pasco, he's out there in San Jose right now, providing you all the coverage out there.
So many stories. Bruce is just an absolute machine.
Yeah.
Right now. It's incredible.
Yeah. March Bruce, different kind of cat, man. That is like, who's like a player that's known to like step up in the playoffs? I was going to say Paul George, but he's the opposite of that.
Oh man. I don't know. Like Derek Jeter. Who's got that sort of playoff blank?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who that went.
Well, that's Bruce that in March, man.
Hey, you know what? You know who else is pumping out a lot of content? That would be Mr. Justin Spears right here. He's got daily stories coming out of spring football.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, they just love to throw pro day like right in between when things get started. So you got practice, pro day, practice. I've only been able to make it out there once because some stuff that I've got going on. So I don't have a full array of impressions for everybody, but you've been out there.
Yeah.
You've seen some things. And I also, we should touch on the guys who aren't participating because you ran that whole list in one of your recent stories. So give me your sort of, you know, overall thoughts on what you've seen so far.
Yeah. I mean, it's still helmets and underwear, as Brent Brennan calls it. So there's only so much that you can take away, but yeah, I really like the speed on this team. I thought that in the 7-on-7 periods, I thought that DJ Jordan and Jordan Ross have really showed that they could be some really good weapons for Arizona. They really love Brandon Phelps. They said Brandon Phelps had the best winter out of anybody on the team, which says a lot. And so, you know, we keep talking about, you know, Chris Hunter and now Giovanni Richardson, no longer just Gio Richardson.
Oh,
star wide receiver.
Okay.
Yeah. He's changed his name on the roster. He prefers to go by Giovanni. And yes, when I first read that, I did the Italian hands. But yeah, Giovanni Richardson and then Trey Spivey and Isaiah Mizell and Chris Hunter. Like those are really, that's a really good core that's coming back. But Brandon Phelps has kind of been this returner that doesn't really get talked about. Like you might throw him in there at the end of something, but you know, he had a really good spring last year and also a really good training camp, and then just kind of fell out of the rotation a little bit. I think, you know, based off of what I've been hearing from the coaches, I think Brandon Phelps could be a guy that really has a strong spring and maybe a training camp and actually sticks this time in the rotation. But the newcomers at receiver, you know, Rodney Gallagher, he's the most experienced one out of the guys that they brought in from the transfer portal. I haven't really seen much from him, but he is in the mix. He's in there getting some work done. But, you know, during a 7-on-7 period the other day, I saw Jordan Ross and also DJ Jordan haul in a couple of touchdowns. So I've been very impressed by the speed that they have in that receiver room. DBs is kind of TBD just because Cam Chapa and Dalen Austin and a couple others, like they're limited right now. So I really don't think we're going to get really how the defensive secondary is going to look until training camp.
Javion Cole is another defensive.
Javion Cole is a guy who's
category.
Out.
Yeah.
But probably my biggest takeaway is the offensive line and O-line is going to get pretty interesting because I would imagine that Zachary Henning is going to be your starting center.
Okay.
And then at right guard, you're gonna have Alexander Deuce back for, you know, being a third year starter. And then your left guard, Rhino Tapatotai, has been playing at that left guard spot. And they feel really good about him filling in for Chuba Ma'ai, who's now no longer with the program because he's graduating. But Rhino, when he got into the games last year after suffering that season-ending knee injury a year prior, and when he was playing left tackle as a redshirt freshman, he was actually pretty solid. Like he wasn't bad. And then he got that injury and he came back and he even said it himself. He felt like he kind of rushed it a little bit, like trying to get back. And then, if you know, he's thinking about his knee and he's just overthinking a lot of things. And I think that's what led to him holding, committing a lot of penalties, struggling at that tackle spot. And so he's big, he's mobile. And I think putting him at that left guard spot and putting him next to a decent center and Zachary Henning, and then whoever fills in at left tackle, I think Rhino working in that small space, I think that's really going to help him out with his holding And then maybe if he's healthy enough, he can move about back to tackle his, the following season. But the good news about Rhino is that he's got reps at tackle. So if there's a situation where one of those guys go down, and if you're in, you know, in dire straits, you can go ahead and put Rhino over at one of those tackle spots. So having a versatility, or having the versatility of a lineman like Rhino, is so key. But putting him at left guard, now you're starting to think, okay, now that you've got the inside part of it, who's going to play tackle? Is it going to be Tristan Bounds at right tackle? But they also ruled him as a possible left tackle candidate. So we could see Tristan Bounds maybe moving over to the left side of the line. And then you got Matthew Lotto and a few others that are in there working. So offensive line, that's really an interesting position group that I'm going to be paying attention to over the next several months.
So guard is like, none of the offensive line positions are easy, right? They are all difficult, but you know, tackle is probably the hardest from a physical standpoint, right? Center is probably the hardest from a mental standpoint. Guard could be the sweet spot for Rhino. We've seen glimpses, you know, not having to move laterally as much at guard, which you have to do at tackle. You have to get wide, right? Like those edge rushers, they're literally coming from the edge, right? They're called edge rushers for a reason. So that might be a little easier for him post knee operation, right? To operate in that smaller space. That position is always one of great interest, and also one that is difficult to judge, even if they are practicing in pads and doing all that stuff from the view that we have in spring ball on the sideline. It's really tough to see what's going on. So but you know what? How do you feel? Like, how about this? How do you feel about that whole position right now compared to a year ago at the same time?
Pretty good.
Better?
Better.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel really good. And they also love Lotto. They think that he is improving at a really good rate. And I think the game reps that he got last year, and you know, the little bit that he saw as a true freshman, I think that could set him up for a really good year three.
Yeah, but it's easy to forget how young and inexperienced a lot of these guys are/were.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, hey man, they were put in a tough spot when Ty Buchanan got hurt in the Holiday Bowl. It's pretty noticeable, like drop off. Kind of less similar. I didn't think of this at the time, Justin, but you know, Jordan Morgan not playing in the Alamo Bowl, we remember, right? Like, it was a rough go for the offensive line. Ty Buchanan going out early in the Holiday Bowl kind of had a similar effect.
True. Yeah.
Like, it took a while to just like settle things down in that game. So obviously super duper important. Justin listed all the guys who are limited for spring ball. I read your list, Justin?
Absolutely. Okay? Go for it. Yeah.
All right. So we got Trey Smith, defensive end, shoulder injury last year. Tristan Bounds missed the end of last season of a lower leg issue. Javion Cole, the cornerback, we mentioned him. Two running backs, Quincy Craig and Kedrick Risino. Two linebackers, Jabari Mann and Myron Robinson. Freshman quarterback Oscar Rios is a left shoulder labrum surgery, so not his throwing arm. So he'll be okay. He'll be back. And then you mentioned Dalen Austin and Cam. Is it Chapa or Chapa?
I've been saying Chapa.
All right. Cam Chapa. Chapa, the transfer from Northern Colorado, is another one who's limited, which means you might see them in a walkthrough situation, but they're probably not going to do a lot in the way of, you know, full out practicing. There's a couple guys, Brent said, probably could come back maybe by the end of spring, but there's still a great value for those newcomers to be here to learn the system.
Absolutely.
Learn the lingo. Develop relationships with their coaches and teammates, be in the weight room, all those things.
Absolutely. Like we saw Trey Smith, he participated in a walkthrough yesterday. He was one of those defensive ends. The starting defensive line that they used the walkthrough was Trey Smith, Cooper Blomstrom, the transfer from Georgetown, and then the two defensive tackles was Leroy Palu and Mace Pesce. So, even though they are limited, they are still participating in walkthroughs and still being in the action and practice.
Have you seen the big fella out there yet, Zach?
Zach Sulepa, yeah, he's been out there.
Does he look trimmer?
I would say he definitely looks slimmer than when he first got here, for sure. So that's still a work in progress. I'm not going to judge Zach Sialepa's body until I see, well, I shouldn't judge anybody's body if you see my belly. but I'm not going to judge Zach Sialepa's conditioning until I see him closer to the season. When, I mean, what we got 5 months left until the season opener roughly. So yeah, then we'll see. But
I have one quick observation before we get out of here and end the show. For this week. And I was out there for like 45 minutes or so the other day. The tight end room that has been largely rebuilt is just very impressive looking.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know whether they can play, but like they look like what you want them to look like, right? Like Cole Rusk, he looks like a dude for sure. Arthur Bann, Shane King, like they very specifically targeted that position. They were looking for a certain type of player, and they've got a bunch of them now and a lot of options. So just something to keep in mind and keep your eye on.
Lots to look forward to with Arizona spring football. The spring game is spring showcase practice fan friendly event on April 25th at Casino del Sol Stadium. We're officially less than a month away from that. Busy time of year. You got U of A baseball, U of A softball, the Tucson Roadrunners, they got Grateful Dead night this weekend. And then the Tucson Sugar Skulls, they officially begin their season on Sunday against the Vegas Nighthawks. So March Madness, man. It's not just basketball. It's just Tucson sports in general, man. But we've got you covered on all fronts. Our small but mighty team providing all the best content on Southern Arizona sports. You can go find all of that at Tucson.com. Also the Wildcaster mobile app. And before we get out of here, a huge thank you, as always, to Pima Federal Credit Union. Whether you're saving for your first car, buying a home, or growing your business, Pima Federal puts your goals first. They offer personalized solutions, competitive rates, and expert guidance every step of the way. Because at Pima Federal, banking isn't just about money, it's about you. Learn more at PimaFederal.org. And then find this podcast and other episodes on the Wildcast podcast platform on Apple and Spotify, and also the video version on Tucson.com. We'll see you guys at some point next week.
Hi, this is Alex Kantrowitz. I'm the host of Big Technology Podcast, a longtime reporter and an on-air contributor to CNBC. And if you're like me, you're trying to figure out how artificial intelligence is changing the business world and our lives. So each week on Big Technology, I bring on key actors from companies building AI tech and outsiders trying to influence it, asking where this is all going. They come from places like NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, and plenty more. So if you want to be smart with your wallet, your career choices, in meetings with your colleagues, and at dinner parties, listen to Big Technology Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.